Well, hey, let me welcome everybody to CCV this weekend. I really hope that you've been enjoying the series we've been in, Sex, Love, and Dating. And today we get to wrap it up talking about this great topic, dating. And if you're married here today, you may be thinking, well, that's great. I just get to check out for the whole message. And I'm going to tell you to check yourself right now. I want you to take notes because I guarantee you almost every married person here has someone single they either know, whether it's a family member or a child or a friend or a coworker. And I'm going to have a very specific takeaway for those of you that are married at the end of the message. But to get us started today talking about dating, I thought I would tell you about Jamie and I, my wife, Jamie and I's very first date. I call it our first 1.5 dates because the first one was a debatable if it was really a date. What happened was we were going to the same school in Southern California, and I had seen her. And when I saw her, I thought, yes, Lord, yes. Yes, you're good. I see that. And I was trying to figure out how to talk to her, and there was no texting back then, and we didn't have social media. So I was trying to figure out how to ask her out without getting rejected or looking like a fool. So, you know, the way it happened was, or kind of our half or fourth date was, I just happened to run into her in the hallway in our dorm. When I was going to a game, I had to drive about an hour away. I was playing in this volleyball league in Huntington Beach, and I happened to run into her, and we just got to talking for the very first time, and I don't even know how this came to my mind, but she's like, well, what's going on with you tonight? And I said, well, I have to drive. I said, it's about an hour drive, but man, if you can take the carpool lane, it's so much better. And so, I don't know, would you want to come so I could take the carpool lane? And I know that's lame. It's lame, but it worked. That's what's important. It worked. And so she came along, and by the end of the night, I finally thought, well, she'll come to just carpool. I'll have enough courage. So I finally asked her out if she'd want to go get some ice cream with me sometime. So our very first date was about a week later, and we went to go get some ice cream. I took her to this famous ice cream place in Newport Beach. I was so excited. It was our first date. And so we got up to the window, and we ordered ice cream, and then I went to reach for my wallet to pay. I forgot my wallet. And I know what some of you ladies are thinking. Don't judge me. Okay, this was an honest mistake. And so I literally will never forget it. I had to turn to Jamie and go, do you mind getting this one? It's amazing she went out with me again. I mean, seriously. But all of us that are married, we have stories of what it was like dating when we were kind of in that phase. But to prepare for this message, for the past month, I sat down with about a dozen singles at a time and many groups of them. And I just asked them this question. What is it like dating in the 21st century? And let me tell you, if you've been out of the dating scene for a while, it is a whole new world out there. As a matter of fact, I think it's more complex now to date than ever in history. And so what I want to do this morning with just a little bit of time we have is I want to talk directly to those of you that are Christian singles and one day want to find a godly spouse. Now, what I want to do is I want to give you what I think is a winning strategy for dating in the 21st century. And I know there's some of you here today, you're not a follower of Jesus, and I am so glad you're here. And the only thing I'd ask of you is I'd ask that maybe you just consider for the first time that there might be merit to doing things differently than maybe how you've always been doing them. But I'm going to be straight up honest with everyone here today. You ready? I'm going to take you down a path for dating that you will never hear in culture out there. And I'm going to do it boldly, and I'm going to do it without apology, and here's why. Because I think we need a different path, and here's exactly why I'm going to do it. Because without a different path in dating, you'll end up where everyone else is. Now, where's everyone else at? Marriage rates in the United States are at the all-time low in our history of a nation. And divorce rates are at an all-time high. And so it would be insane of me to get up here and say, well, just do what everyone else is doing, because you will end up where everyone else is at. And so I'm going to take you on a different path. And so if you got your notes, take them out. I want to talk to you about a winning strategy for dating in the 21st century. Here's point number one. You have to be realistic about dating. Be realistic. What do I mean? Well, let me put it this way. Rutgers University did a study a few years back, and they just asked single women in their 20s, what is the number one requirement that you should have in a spouse? What's your number one requirement? You know what their answer was? Here it is. My soulmate. Just has to be my soulmate. I mean, is that true? I mean, did God create one person since the creation of time, and that if you just met that soulmate, everything turns out perfect? Some of you married people are looking at your spouse going, what happened to me? What that? Well, no, and here's what I want to tell you. beware of the soulmate myth. Now, let me tell you where this myth came from, and this is going to blow your mind, okay? This myth developed 2,000 years ago by who? By the Greek philosopher Plato. He believed in Greek mythology, and what Plato wrote down and what he developed that developed this myth is he said, in the beginning of time, Zeus and the other gods created, when they created humanity, they actually created these super beings. There were these big round beings, and they were consisted of both male and female. But what happened, and Zeus observed, was these super humans became too powerful for the gods, and the gods were afraid that they were going to overtake them. And so Zeus decided to do something. He decided to split these superhumans in half, and they went male one direction, female the other direction. And here's what Plato thought. If those two people ever meet in life, oh, it will be a love that's inseparable. Doesn't that sound so romantic? It's just not true. I mean, you'll never find the idea of a soulmate anywhere in Scripture. And I'm going to tell you what I wish someone would have told me a long, long time ago, is that what happens when you think you're going to have a soulmate, and how do you determine if someone is your soulmate, if that's what you believe? One word, chemistry. Pew, chemistry. When I feel chemistry with someone, that's who my soulmate is. And that's why you hear people say things like this, Ashley, no one's ever felt this way before, ever. You don't understand. I mean, we were driving in the car, and I didn't know if he was the one, and then all of a sudden, our song came on the radio, and I knew, you knew he was the one. But let me tell you, because I wish someone would have told me this. What happens to your brain chemically when you feel chemistry with someone else? Can I tell you? Let me summarize it. You lose your mind. You legitimately, I'm not joking, like you literally lose your mind. And most experts say for about 12 to 18 months. As a matter of fact, Dr. Helen Fisher, a renowned biological psychologist, I mean world-renowned, did this study where she did brain scans on couples that were in love in the first 8 months of their relationship, and then she did brain scans, the same brain scans with people that were 20 months or longer in a relationship. And can I summarize her findings for you? This is unbelievable. Here's a brain scan of a normal human, okay? Like if you were dating someone 20 months or longer, see all this cognitive activity going on here? You see all that reasoning, the green and blue? You see all that? There's neurons firing. Here's what your brain looks like within the first 8 months of dating, according to Dr. Helen Fisher. This is actual brain scans. It looks like that. Yeah. This isn't the actual scan, but that's the summary of her studies. You lose your mind. I mean, one of the researchers, they asked this girl, they said, hey, tell us about your boyfriend. Tell us about his weaknesses. And she told the researcher, she goes, that's what's so crazy. I looked, he actually doesn't have any. And the researcher said, really? And she goes, I know, I guess I'm just one of the lucky ones. I am. You're not lucky, your brain looks like that. That's what's going on. Now, what happens when the relationship turns sexual? This happens. Then you got nothing. Then you got nothing. That's what happens. And we have to understand this myth. Now, listen, chemically what happens to your brain when you're in this phase early in dating is you're just focused on getting and keeping, getting and keeping, getting and keeping. What's missing? Evaluating. And the soulmate myth is so dangerous because most people believe this. When I find my soulmate, when I meet my soulmate, everything's going to be great. But what happens when you marry your soulmate and everything doesn't turn out great? Which, by the way, is every marriage, mine included. That's why I think in the Bible, Ephesians chapter 5, go read Ephesians chapter 5, it debunks the soulmate myth. Because you know what God tells us is needed in marriage? Two things, sacrifice and mutual submission. And those things would never be required if you had a soulmate that was going to make everything great. So beware of the soulmate myth. God gives us a choice in who we marry. And it is our job to discern who that is. And that's why I believe in dating, and this is, I think, worth you coming to church today. You should write this down. Your dating focus should be on discernment instead of destiny. Don't ever think there's a soulmate and you're just have some destiny relationship. You should be discerning. So that's point number one, is you got to be realistic and have reality when it comes to dating. Now, number two, you need to know your purpose for dating. Do you know what I hear so many people say the purpose of dating is? It's this. It's to have fun. I mean, I talk to so many singles, and there's so many of you out there right now, and this is not all of you, but some of you, your whole goal for dating is pleasure. It's just fun, and you're out there, you're going to have a good time, a really good time, and that's your focus. And so you're out there, and, you know, it's just the names change all the time for you. You can't even remember half the names. I mean, there's just so many and so much pleasure, and it's fun. You're living the life. I mean, you don't even remember your name half the time because you change your identity all the time to have some more fun, right? I mean, you tell people, I'm pre-med. You don't even know how to spell pre-med. Okay, that's not you. And all of a sudden, someone says, well, they want to have a define the relationship conversation, and you said, you just did. It's over. Because it's just fun for you. And here's the problem. You're basing your idea on what dating should be about based on this assumption. Listen carefully. You think that this is your present. And it's like, woohoo, it's the present. But one day in the future, yeah, maybe I'll meet someone, we'll settle down. But all my present, which then will be my past, it disappears. And it just disappears in my past. It's gone. And I'm going to tell you what every single married person here today would tell you. And now you'll know. And it's this, that your present right now never stays in the past. It always follows you to your future. Always. And it's like a pesky little gnat that's with you all the time. And I'm telling you, as a pastor, I've talked to so many married people that brought things into their future marriage that they never thought would show up there. They thought it just disappeared. Now listen, you actually, when you read the Bible, you won't find the word dating. Do you know modern dating has really only been around for about 100 years? Prior to that, you had to ask permission from a parent or you had arranged marriages. But I think we can deduct this biblically about dating. And here's what I want you to understand of what your purpose is of dating. And this will sound crazy to those of you that have just been on this fun and pleasure kick. Here's your purpose for dating. Why date? Only to evaluate and find a mate. And I added that word of evaluate, which isn't in your notes, so you need to write it down. And some of you are like, Ashley, that's so narrow-minded. Well, Jesus said in Matthew chapter 7, take the narrow road. Because the broad road leads to destruction, and so many people are destroying themselves and their future relationships because they're just having, they think that their present won't ever show up in their future. And here's the big issue, okay? If you don't nail this down, what your purpose is, you will end up falling in love with someone that's not marriage material. And then that's the story I heard from so many singles, and there was so much pain in their eyes because they thought I was just out having fun, but then I fell in love, and he wasn't marriage material. So if you just will determine your purpose up front, if someone isn't marriage material right up front, done. You're done with them. And you can save yourself so much pain in the future. But how do you figure out, like, who is dating material then? Well, that leads to point number three, which is you need to write out your dating manifesto. What do I mean? I mean that in advance, you need to literally take out a piece of paper or get on your computer, iPad, or phone, and you need to, not in just your mind, you need to write out what will be my requirements if I will date someone, and when I start dating them, what will happen in that dating relationship? What will be my standards? And I almost wrote down, like, write your standards down or what will be your requirements, but forget that. Who you marry is the second most important decision you will ever make in life outside of following Jesus. So you don't need requirements. You need a manifesto. So write it down. And write it down in advance while your brain is still some semblance of firing on all cylinders. Right? Do it in advance. And I'm going to give you three things today that I think should show up on every single person's manifesto. Now, you can have a list of 10 or 20, or you make it as long as you want, but I'm going to say three that should show up on every single one, and the first one is the very most important. It's this. Here's the first one. My number one dating requirement will be someone that is Jesus-centered, and I chose those words very specifically. Now, what are most people's number one requirement or number one thing they look for in dating someone? You know what it is? It's not this. It's attraction. It's attraction. And now listen, I'm not saying that attraction should not show up on your manifesto. It should be there. You should be attracted to your spouse. If your future, thinking about your future spouse makes you want to, like, don't date them, okay? Don't. It should be there. But listen to my point. Listen carefully. Attraction can be my biggest distraction. You should write that down in your manifesto because it is. When it comes to finding someone Jesus-centered, attraction can be my biggest distraction. Why? Because you can have standards and values and everything else, but you know that when you get around someone, it's like, woo, wow. You're so in awe with someone, we can change our values, can't we? It's like you talk to someone, and you're like, what are your values? And all of a sudden you're like, oh, those are my values too. Yeah. I mean, we can just change them. And so I'm telling you, just be aware of this. And that's why people ask me about online dating. Like, what do you think of it? And I say, I think it can be a powerful tool if you use it the right way. Here's why. Because if you can look at someone's values, as long as they're not lying, and beware, there's lots of liars out there. But if you can see someone's values ahead of time and vet those, that's a powerful tool versus just getting around someone and sparks start flying. I talked to a lot of singles and they said, Ashley, the moment I started writing down all my real values online, I weeded out like 3/4 of anybody contacting me. And I thought, that's great, how powerful. And here's another piece of advice. Don't ever ask someone a yes or no question, are you a Christian? Because Christian means so many different things to so many different people. And you can find someone that says, yeah, I'm a Christian, and they're not at all. So here's the question I think you should ask someone when you're trying to discern this. What does it mean to you to follow Jesus? And then you listen intently to their answer, because that is a better question for you to ask. Now, someone being Jesus-centered being your number one requirement, some of you are thinking, well, Ashley, of course, you would say that because you're the pastor. You have to say that. Okay, but I want to do something right now. I want to ask some help from the married people in the audience right now. If you've been married and you're a Christian more than 10 years, I want you to stand to your feet on every single campus. Every campus, married people that have been married more than 10 years who are Christians, stand up right now. I want you to stand up. Just stand up right in the auditorium you're at, okay? Now, here's what I want you to do. I want those of you that are married that have been Christians more than 10 years, I want you to sit down if you disagree that a single's number one thing they should be looking for is someone that's Jesus-centered. Now, singles, on every campus, look around the room. Do you understand what people whose marriages have lasted more than 10 years are telling you? This is what matters in marriage. It does. Thank you, married people, for playing along. Thank you. Great job. Yeah. This is why Jesus wrote in Mark 10:9, he said this, therefore, what God has joined together, let no one separate. But you have to let God be the joiner for a relationship for it to ask. Let me give you a picture that I hope helps. It's a wheel. If you want a wheel to not collapse on itself, you have to have a strong center. And I'm telling you, with marriage, if Jesus is not at the center of your marriage, it is going to be really hard for it not to crumble on itself. And a lot of people put everything else in the middle, like attraction or kids or finances or something else, and it crumbles eventually. Now, they like Jesus as a little spoke, sure. But unless Jesus is your center, he can sustain everything else in your life, and it actually works. And I'm just telling you, make that your number one requirement. And some of you ladies out there are saying this right now. Ashley, I would love to find a Jesus-centered guy, but there aren't any out there. I've been dating. All guys are the same. All guys are exactly alike. And here's what I want to tell you. No, they're not. Maybe all the guys you date are exactly alike, but not all guys are alike. And I want to give you ladies an example from fishing. A little fishing 101 example. You ready? What type of fish does a fisherman catch 99% of the time? It's what he baits his hook with. That determines what kind of fish he catches. And ladies, if you fish with your body, you are going to catch a bad boy body snatcher every single time. You will. Yeah. And let me tell you, godly men, Jesus-centered men, are not attracted to your body showing ways. They're not. They're looking for something else. Now, men, every single woman I talk to in these groups of people, you know what they said? They're looking for a leader. They're looking for a Christian leader. And based on some of the stories, I'm telling you, men, you have some work to do. So I'm calling the men of CCV to step up. A woman is not a commodity. She is not someone to be used and thrown away the next day. You're better than that. I'm not calling men to step up and be men and be Jesus-centered. Now, let me give you two verses you can write down in your manifesto I think will help. One for guys and one for girls, okay? For guys, here's what you're looking for, a Proverbs 31:30 woman. Here's what Proverbs 31:30 says, charm is deceptive and beauty is fleeting. What's the summary? Attraction is a distraction. But a woman who fears the Lord is to be praised. Find a woman who's Jesus-centered. Now, ladies, I think you need to find an Acts 3 man. And you might think that's an odd verse, but Acts 3, or in Acts 6, what was going on was the disciples had to find new leaders to bring into the church, new men that were leaders, and they had a couple requirements. I think they should be the exact same requirements you look for in a man. Because here was the instructions of the church. Choose men from among you who are known to be full of the Spirit and wisdom. They just don't have the Spirit. They are full of the Spirit. And they're wise. And don't just look at some for someone who's attractive. That should be something you put down in your manifesto. Okay, that's number one. Number two is this. You need to write down what your physical boundaries will be. My physical boundaries will be what? Now, I don't have time to go deep into this. I wish I did. This is a whole nother message. Let me just talk about two things really quickly. Number one, people ask me, Ashley, what about living together? Like, shouldn't you test drive the car before you buy it? And here's what I want to tell you. Living together with someone before you're married is like boarding an airplane that has an 80% chance of wrecking. What do I mean? Every study done, you go read them yourself, on people that live together before they're married says that you have a 50 to 80% higher likelihood of divorce if you live together before marriage. And the divorce rate's already 40 to 50% based on what study you read. It's like it's over before you ever started. Why would you do that? And I know sometimes statistics don't move the dial for some of you. You're like, well, I'm not a statistic. I mean, our situation's unique, Ashley. No, it's not. Let me burst your bubble. You're unique. Your situation is not unique at all. Trust me, all those people before that thought their situation was unique, it wasn't. So don't do it. It's never wise. Now, people ask all the time, what about sex before marriage? Is it really that big of a deal? People don't think it's a big deal based on one major myth, and it's this, that sex is just physical. Every message in culture today, from songs to radio to movies to everything, tells you one thing, sex is just physical. It's just physical. Nothing could be further from the truth. And let me prove it, because I don't have time, but not to get weird on you. If sex was just physical, we would look at a woman who's been hit by a man the exact same way we look at a woman who's been raped by a man. We know those two are absolutely different. And we would never look at a woman who's been raped and say, once you physically heal, just get over it. I mean, I cringe even saying that. Because we know sex is not physical, it's spiritual, it's emotional. It's so much a part of who you are because God designed it to be that way. And he designed it to be experienced in the context of a marriage. And that's why every study done says that, you know who those are who are most satisfied sexually? Those who are married. You're like, my mom and dad? Yeah, they are. So save it. And that's why in 1 Thessalonians 4, 3 through 5, it says this. It's God's will that you be sanctified, that you would avoid sexual immorality. God's not a killjoy. He wants the best sex for you ever if you do it his way. That each of you should learn to control your body in a way that's holy and honorable, not in passionate lust like the pagans who do not know God. Can I tell you what I've never heard as a pastor from someone who's married and struggling? Ashley, you know what our issue was? We waited until marriage to have sex. That's our issue. Never heard that. I've heard the exact opposite so many times. And let me break a myth for you right now. You are sexually compatible with millions and millions and millions of people. You are. I mean, sex is not a hard thing. Teenagers figure it out. You are not relationally compatible with that many people. And when you get sexual, it just clouds your judgment and if you're relationally and spiritually compatible. So hold off. But write down your physical boundaries in your manifesto and hold yourself accountable. And when you date someone, share with them immediately what your physical boundaries are. And if they're not into that, done. Number three, and I have to go through this one quick. Number three on your manifesto should be this. All require confirmation from godly people. You know, I heard over and over again talking to singles. They said, Ashley, I was kind of dating. It was just fun. And then I fell in love. And man, everybody told me. My mom told me, oh, honey, he's not good. My dad told me. All my friends said, oh, are you sure? And I just never listened. And then later on, they just had so much regret. Why would you not, if this is such an important decision and you know what happens to your brain, why would you not write down that you'd require confirmation from godly people in your life that want what's best for you? One of my greatest dating regrets in my life is because I didn't listen to my mom and dad. And when I started dating Jamie, I asked for their input. And you know why some of you don't want to ask? It's because you already know the answer that you would get. And it scares you to death because he's your security. He's your financial security. Or she's your sexual outlet and you're not sure you want to give it up. But listen to what the wisest man on earth said to his young son. Refuse good advice and watch your plans fail. Take good counsel and watch them succeed. So write that down in your manifesto. Now, here's the three things I covered with you. Number one, your number one requirement is someone Jesus-centered. Number two, you write down your physical boundaries and hold yourself accountable. And number three is that you require godly confirmation from other people in your life. And if you would do those three things, singles, I promise you, you would never look back at a regret in a dating relationship. You wouldn't. So what's the takeaway today? Here's the takeaway. Let me talk to you married people first. I want you married people who have singles in your life, whether it's a child or a coworker or someone else, I want you to circle something in the notes today that you need to go and help pour into some singles in your life. Because, guys, we're a church, we're a body, we need each other to encourage each other. And you married people need to pour into the singles around you. But if you're single here today, let me ask you, what is God impressing upon you? Have you got off base in this dating thing in the 21st century? Do you need to get back on a different path? And what's it going to require? For some of you, you've messed up the soulmate myth. For some of you, you've just messed up your purpose. You've never, ever told yourself, my only purpose for dating should be to evaluate and find a mate. And if he's not mate material, cut him off. Some of you, you need to write down your dating manifesto, and you don't have any physical boundaries right now. I mean, it's all things go. What's God telling you? I think he's telling every single person here something today. But here's what I want to do. As I was putting this message together, I just felt like God was telling me to challenge 100 singles in our church to do something radical. And here's who I'm challenging to do this, and I'm only choosing 100 because I think this is a radical thing and you'd be one of the select few. And this is for people that you know, if you're single, you know you're a serial dater. It's like you just date all sorts of people all the time. And man, the last 4 or 5 or 10 relationships have all ended the exact same way, terribly. And you finally, today, maybe for the first time, have said, you know what the common denominator was in every single one of those relationships? Well, that would be you. And you realize, I need to do something drastic. I need to do something totally different. Or maybe you've come out of a really long-term relationship and it's ended badly. And you look back now and you're like, I was blind. I mean, I was completely blind. What do I do now? Or maybe some of you men out there, you are addicted to pornography and you look at women as only as a commodity. If you were really honest with yourself, you'd say that. For those of you that know you've got off path or you need to do something different in dating, here's what I'm challenging 100 singles across all of our CCV campuses to do. I want you to take 1 year off from dating. What? Yeah. 1 year off. And you mark your calendar for February 14th, 2017. It'll be an easy date to remember. And there's no dating, no romance for 1 year. Now, why would I challenge you to do that? Because for some of you, you have to give yourself space to do what the Bible says, which is to renew your mind. You need to renew your mind about what dating's all about so you don't go mess it up again. Now, here's why this is so powerful. And you might say, well, what do I do in that year off, Ashley? Well, here's what you do. You do whatever you'd want the person you're trying to meet, what they would be doing. And here's why I think this is such a huge deal. Because you will never attract and meet the right person until you become the right person. Do you understand that? Some of you are like, I'm looking for Mr. Right. But you aren't that person yourself. How would Mr. Wright or Mrs. Wright ever be attracted to or want to meet you when you're not that person? So you need a year off to become the person that you're actually looking for. Do you understand how powerful that would be for our church? For single people to become exactly who they're looking for? So I'm challenging 100 people to do that. And if you want to take that challenge, here's what I want you to do. I want you to commit. I want you to email 100@ccv.church. And if you would commit to doing this, here's our commitment to you. We will commit to praying for you for the next year. And in addition to that, we'll commit to have a gathering for these 100 or so people to try to help you go further, faster in becoming all that God wants you to be. I think God's calling some people out. I think some of you showed up this weekend and you weren't sure why, and you're sitting there going, God, now I know. Because this thing out there, can I just tell you, those who've been married for a while, you go do some research on what's happening in dating, it will break your heart. Men, my goodness, get this right. God wants you to meet someone and have something amazing. And ladies, you do not need to throw your body out there at all to find the right man. Let's do it different. Let's do it different. And as we do, may we see God's blessing on us, and that we know we can trust a God that when we do it God's way, we can experience everything God has for us. Let's everybody bow your heads. I want to pray for every single person here on all our campuses. Father, this is a tough subject because you know what singles are going through today. You know the apps, Tinder and OkCupid. You know all the online stories. You know the stories of women who've been just abused and taken advantage of. You know guys who, if they're honest, they know that this pornography thing has just blown their mind up to how they actually view women. And God, I think you want to just transform some people today. And I pray for those that want to take this one-year challenge. I pray you give them boldness and courage. God, I pray for every single other person here today that you might just give them specifically what you want them to do. I pray for singles everywhere taking out pieces of paper this week and writing out a manifesto that honors you. And God, as they do that, may we as a church just surround those that are singles and support them in everything you want for them. In Jesus' name, amen.